And get started. Welcome back. Hope everybody enjoyed their fall break. Any questions, comments before we dive in? Concerns? Desires? What do you want to talk about today? I think I heard dual active bridge from the back, so we'll go with that. So last time we made it most of the way through solving a dual active bridge converter. We looked at splitting up the converter into its equivalent circuits during each of the four subintervals, noting that we have half cycle symmetry in the dual active bridge. All AC waveforms, they're anti-symmetric across a half period. All waveforms on the DC side, like input and output current, will be symmetric across the half period. Using that, we really just looked at one half period, which consists of the resonant interval to get zero voltage switching on the primary, phase shift interval where the inductor current ramps, secondary switching when we get DVS on the secondary side, all four devices, and then this fourth interval I called here power delivery. In the case where the conversion ratio is matched to the turns ratio, that means that during that interval, our current just sits at its peak value. We've got a constant IP from the input and IP reflected through to the output as our output current. Okay. From those equivalent circuits, we were able to sketch, in this case, two state planes. One normalized according to the primary side resonance with our tank inductance and our primary side capacitance, and then one normalized the secondary side resonance where we had our tank inductance and secondary side capacitance reflected one way or the other through the transformer. Okay. Sketching those, he talked about ZVS conditions on that this mode of operation on the primary side. We need to ensure that our current at the beginning of the primary side resonant interval, which was this J peak, is large enough to be able to traverse from -1 to 1 on the state plane, or equivalently has enough energy stored in the inductor to be able to get the primary side capacitance all the way from minus VG up to positive VG, or the other direction on the other switching interval to get ZVS. On the secondary side, we don't really have a ZVS constraint from the state plane. What we found is that because this resonance is traversed in the opposite direction where we are going towards the DC voltage, it'll always get there. No matter where we start this J2, I can resonate over my circle, will always make it past the center on the MS axis. The only caveat there is that may put us at a higher peak current than we want. If I want a peak current somewhere down here, when I start resonating, I'm going to go up to this yellow dot. It'd be too high at light load, so we'd have to actually make it hard switch. Okay. Then right at the end, we went through and solved from our two state planes. We have two non-resonant intervals, the phase shift and power delivery, and then two resonant intervals for the primary side ZVS and secondary side ZVS. Resonant intervals, we get two equations relating the radii at the beginning and end, and then one for the angle. Both of those. For subinterval 2 phase shift, we get just one equation saying slope on the inductor current times time is delta I. And then for interval 4, since that's just a single point on our state plane, neither the voltage nor current on the state plane are changing, we don't really get an equation. And I just wrote this equation here, which is the one we get for any converter. The sum of the length of all intervals is equal to switching period. I just did half of it instead of saying 2T1, 2T2, 2T3, and 2T4 is TF. Same thing. Okay. And then that's where we ended. The last thing I need to do is the averaging step where I'll average the output current. Thing I do want to note is I had an error in the slides here where I've drawn this from -1 to 1. My V base on this state plane should be NT times VG. I was missing that NT in what I had on the slides last time. It was correct here when we drew our own state planes. It's copied over wrong when I threw these figures in. Okay. I mentioned the last step is the averaging step. We're going to average the output current. So I want to get an equation for the average output current. Because of this whole two state plane thing, to get away from all these prime variables, I'm going to average the output current reflected through to the primary, which it doesn't actually do. It goes through a bridge and things, but I'm just going to average I out times the transformer turns ratio. That'll allow me to work with my variables J1, J2 instead of the primes. Yeah. Nothing. Did I don't have my circuit anymore. NT is N. I may have various times jumped between notations, but there's no difference there. NT is N for the transformer, and if I ever in my equations just called it N. But no significance there. So what I'm going to do is instead of averaging directly the output current, I'm just going to multiply this whole thing by NT or N, as you like. We'll scale it by the transformer turns ratio, but that'll make it so that I can use my primary side normalization and not have to jump between prime variables and non-prime variables. One reason that I want to do it that way, because when I look at the output current, it is just a rectified version of my inductor current scaled through the transformer turns ratio. During the primary side VVS interval, the primary side switching, the secondary side, that bridge is locked in a constant to stay with two devices on, so the current just comes straight through to the output. But during the secondary side switching interval, and this is a little bit small here, but I out zero during T3. So during that switching interval where the secondary side devices are commutating, look at it here, the output is no longer connected to the circuit. All of the tank current goes through the transformer and then flows through the device output capacitance. And splitting between the high and low side devices on one bridge and coming back through the high and low side devices on the other bridge. But during this time, the output current is zero. I'm not going to have anything going on with my output current that relates to my secondary side resonant interval. So I'm not going to need to worry about what's going on with this prime stuff. Because of that, I'm going to write an expression for N T times the average value of I out. So it's going to be by definition two over TS times the integral from zero to TS over two, NT times I out of T, DT. Okay, again, because this is half cycle symmetric, you just integrate over the first half period. Second half period is the same, so the averages are the same, whether I do a half period or a full period or end period in steady state. Okay. And as before, I can say that this integral is equal to sum of the integrals during each of the individual periods. I have four of them, T1 through T4. Integrals of current are going to give me charge. So I'll have Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3 plus Q4, where, for example, this is Q1, Q2 is here. Q4 is this. Okay, if I evaluate each of these charges, what am I going to get? Q1, again, is the integral of some segment of a sinusoid over some partial resonant period. We can evaluate that by taking our state plane and denormalizing into the time domain and then integrating that sinusoid between two different angles. Or we can apply the same insight, say what's going on during this T1 interval. During T1, which is our subinterval 1, we're in this circuit here. All of the inductor current is flowing through this equivalent primary side capacitance, CP. So current in the inductor is the current in the capacitor. The integral of that current is C times the total change in voltage on the capacitor. I is equal to C dV dt, integrating both sides. During that interval, well, the purpose of it is to get the capacitor voltage from minus VG up to plus VG. So the total integral of current during that time is going to be the charge supplied to that capacitor, which is CP times 2VG, CP capacitance times the change in voltage, which is 2VG from minus VG to plus VG. So our Q1, then, say, is just CP times 2VG. Thing is really chugging today. What can I shut down? Nothing, huh? Okay. Sorry about that. Hoping something can get rid of the lag on the screen here. Okay. That's Q1 for Q2. Q2 is going to be the integral of this current during this ramping time. Based on how we define them, this ramps from I1 to minus I2 in a linear fashion over the duration of this time. So that integral is going to look just like the integral of the trapezoid. We say it is time T2 times the average value during that time, which is I1 plus minus I2 over 2. Q3, our easiest one, that's 0. The arguments made earlier, during this time, all of the tank current is flowing through the device capacitances, leaving 0 to go to the output. And then Q4, we just have a constant current. This value we called I peak for the duration of that interval. So the interval is going to look like T4 times I peak. Okay, and that's my answer. Now I'm going to normalize that by dividing through by I base. And then we're gonna have to multiply and divide by omega naught. Let's do that one step at a time. First thing I'm gonna do is divide the whole thing by I base. So on the left, I'll get nt times average value of I out over I base. I'm going to just define that as J, capital J, my normalized output current reflected to the primary side. Be equal to 2 over TS, and I'll distribute the I base to all of my terms in here. For this first term, CP times 2VG, break apart my I base. CP is 2VG. As I divide by I base is VG over R naught. Just like that. I will let my VGs cancel. And I can square this CP, put it under the radical. I'll get radical LLCP, which is 1 over omega naught. I go through the rest of my terms here. I can keep the I base together and just normalize my currents. J1 minus J2 over 2, T4 times J peak. So I guess my current normalized, but I still have these times. What I'm going to do is multiply through by omega naught. And then divide the whole thing by omega naught, multiplying by one, not changing the equation, but that'll let me normalize all my times. J is equal to 2 over TS. And I'm going to multiply by omega naught over omega naught. What I'll do is leave the denominator out here and multiply that numerator omega naught through everything. So this term, that is 1 over omega naught, multiplied by omega naught, what I'm going to be left with is just the 2. And in my other two terms, omega naught is going to multiply a t and give me back an angle. Theta 2, j1 minus j2 over 2, plus theta 4, j peak. One thing left is this thing out front. This here is 2fs over omega naught. Omega naught, 2 pi f naught. Cancel here. I'm going to get this is f over pi. Okay, let's just give a final expression here. J is equal to F over pi 2 plus theta 2, 1 minus J2, 2 plus theta 4, J peak. Okay, so now we have our complete solution. I want to just discuss briefly here, because this is some information I doled out through lectures while I was out the other week. So now we have a complete set of equations between everything we solved off the state plane, our complete period, and our averaging step. More often than not, these equations are going to be unsolvable in closed form because of the equations I get from the state plane have these trig terms and I have polynomial terms. from my non-resonant intervals. I try to cram all these things together. I have a system of equations with the right number of independent equations, the right number of unknowns. They're transcendental in nature. You can't solve them in closed form and just say, okay, J is this as a function of theta. Now, we have methods to deal with that. I can take all these equations and throw them in MATLAB and say, hey, MATLAB, solve this. And it'll find me a numerical answer subject to whatever constraints I want. Occasionally, you can find a simple way to traverse these equations, even if you can't write a closed form expression. Find what's one variable that I can pick and be able to solve through everything. That's the case here. One way to do that is I'm going to pick a J peak, whatever it is. In reality, I'll probably sweep over a wide range of J peaks. In this first equation, if I've selected a J peak, I can solve J1. The second equation, if I have that J1, I can solve alpha. From this equation down here in subinterval 3, I can solve a J2 once I have my J peak, and I can solve a delta once I have that J2. Now I have J1 and J2, so I can solve theta 2, and then I can solve theta 4 from down here. So I can, just by selecting that J peak, kind of step through my equation, get an eventual solution for all these parameters, and then for what is the normalized output current, J. So that's how I went about solving it. I'm going to show that solution on the next slide. This expression just plugged in a couple of things from the one on the previous slide. So this term and this term change. That's just by plugging in for theta 4, solved here, with pi over f minus the other three intervals. And then plugging in for theta 2, it's J1 plus J2 over 2. So I plug that in. I get squares here and 1 over 4. Again, a different time, but same thing here. Now, by picking a J peak, I can go through, solve all of the parameters of operation, and eventually solve my normalized output current. If I plot over a range of J peak, what is this normalized output current for a range of different normalized switching frequencies? What I get is this output plane shown here. And output plane, is a general way to look at resonant soft switching converters solved using state plane analysis. It requires a little bit of a thought to get used to how things are interpreted on this output plane, because we are looking at all normalized parameters. So if I, for example, move to the right on the x-axis, that's J peak increasing, which could be because my peak current is increasing or because I base is decreasing, right? I base can decrease by VG going down or are not going up. So if I'm looking at changing the parameters, I can change how this state plane looks, change where I am on this, or changing values of current. Similarly, when I hop between different curves in F, that may be because I'm changing switching frequency, or maybe because I'm changing tank parameters. FS divided by F naught divided by my tank. Okay. So we look at this. We see this first thing that I plotted here, this green line. Let's stick with green. Is J is equal to J peak. Okay. And that is my ideal behavior. The motivation of this DAB, one thing that I said could be great about it, could make it this ultimate converter, is that I have just the output current stressing my devices. In this case, my peak current would just be equal to whatever my output current is. Okay. I wouldn't have any additional RMS currents. I would have peak stresses equal to just what I need to deliver the output power. Okay. We see that none of the actual curves for the converter, so then blue curves are all solutions to this equation. None of them quite get there, but I begin to approach that as F gets very small. Okay. And F is FS over F naught. So I can approach to this ideal behavior if my switching frequency is way smaller than my resonant frequency, switching very slowly. Okay. Reason that works out is these three intervals, okay, my primary side resonance, secondary side resonance, and phase shift intervals are kind of fixed time independent of switching frequency. It takes however long it takes to get ZVS, however long it takes to ramp the inductor current, however long it takes to get ZVS on the secondary, and then it doesn't matter how long I'm in T4, how long I'm just sitting at this single point on the state plane, those intervals will look the same. So if I make T4 huge, then I'm spending 95% of my time just delivering power, only some very small portion of it doing any of this ZVS or inductor current ramping, and then my average should approach to high peak. Okay? So if I switch really darn slow, these intervals will be the same amount of time, but they'll encompass a really small portion of the total period. Okay. Problems with that? Well, then I got to design the transformer, got to design everything to operate with that really low switching frequency. So it may not be a good way to operate. Conversely, if I go to very high F, where my switching frequency approaches my resonant frequency, see is that for currents above J peak is equal to 2, which is my limit where I can obtain ZVS, I have very resonant operation. I really can't get any more output power out of this thing. As I go up higher above my ZVS boundary, my J, my output current is just dropping off, and I'll have a maximum power that I can deliver. Perhaps this thing can only really operate at a single point. If I want to go any higher power, well, my J peak goes up, but I can't get to any higher power. If I want to go any lower, I'm going to lose ZVS. Okay. Reason that happens is I approach F is equal to 1, my switching frequency is equal to the resonant frequency of the circuit. Now this is the opposite of what we were saying for the ideal behavior, spending almost the entire period in these resonant intervals. I don't have any time to get into T4 and actually deliver output power. Something close to that limit you'll examine on the homework. Okay. Let's see a little bit more on this. Let's look at some example waveforms. Unfortunately, I had a second minor mistake if you printed out the slides, and that these red vertical lines were just not in the right position. They were in arbitrary positions. I fixed them here. If you print off the slides, these red vertical lines will just be non-significant. Here they are, denoting the end of each interval. I've got my primary side resonant interval, power delivery interval, secondary side resonant interval. So I'm going to look at the waveforms for the tank inductor current and primary side voltage for a few different points, and this red dot labels on the output plane where I am. This is for an example with FS is 1 megahertz, VG is 150 volts, V 12 volts, LL is 15 microhenries, CP is 300 picofarads, and CS is CP over N squared. Makes it so that my primary and secondary resonant intervals are identical, just reflected through the transformer. Okay. The first point I'm looking at here is J peak equal to 2. That's exactly on my ZVS boundary. And because of this, because my intervals are identical, it puts me exactly on the ZVS boundary, exactly at the ZVS limit of both the primary and secondary side. So in these waveforms, I have a very significant resonance in interval one to get from minus VG up to plus VG. Takes me from a peak current all the way down to zero, since I'm right at the ZVS boundary. And because of the symmetry and capacitances, it takes me same amount of time to get from zero up to the peak current in interval three. And in this case, right up the ZVS bound, I have zero T2. I have no phase shift interval. As soon as I finish my resonance on the primary, I start my resonance on the secondary. And between those two resonances, it carries me all the way from minus I peak to plus I peak. This is possible only because the capacitances are the same. So they're the same normalized by the transformer turns ratio. So the dynamics of these two resonances are identical. If these were any different, then I'd need some small phase shift in here to make up any difference in those two resonances. Otherwise, I'd have some DC offset. Okay. So this is at J peak equal to 2 right on the ZVS bound. As I increase J peak, in this case up to 3, now I have some significant phase shift to get there. It carries me to higher peak currents, and at those higher peak currents, I'm able to achieve ZVS a lot more overhead, much quicker, making my state plane taller, which makes those arcs a shorter theta and makes the change in current smaller as I go through that resonance. Okay. As I keep going to higher values of J peak, same trends apply. Now I have more phase shift, even faster ZVS intervals. I'm starting to look more or less linear during my resonant interval. And then as I continue to go higher, I get towards inductor current waveforms that begin to look more triangular than nearly square. I started out here, had kind of a trapezoidal wave, spent a lot of time in T4 in my power delivery subinterval. I go up to higher and higher values of peak current, my inductor current approaches a triangle wave. As I go even further up to, this is J peak equal to 6. I'm now spending almost my entire interval in this phase shift, or my entire period in this phase shift interval. Okay, it gets me up to a very high peak current, which gives me very easy, very quick ZVS. I have a ton of current available when I start switching my devices. The problem is that I'm spending almost my entire time in this phase shift interval where I have very little current delivered to the output, if any. So the symmetry here, I actually have none. The capacitances weren't equal. With the scale factor of 1 over NT, I could have a little bit of current. But as it is, start at a negative current, go up to some big positive current. As I average through all of that, I'm going to get more or less zero. So I'm delivering all of my power just in this short time, even though I've gone up to a very high current limit as I let that time collapse down. Very little actual average output power. That's why you see these curves on the output plane begin to drop off and more significant for operation with a high F or a long resonant period relative to the switching period. So this form a characteristic of the DAB for much of the design range here. Back to the big one. If I want to operate at some output current, look at this F is equal to 0.6 curve. I have two places that I can achieve that same output current. The one to the left is always going to be better in terms of RMS currents. So this stuff up here, when my curve starts decreasing again, is all because my inductor current is becoming more triangular, decreasing its average, but having very high peak. which will mean delivering the same power with more RMS currents. Okay. These two, same output current. This one will have lower RMS currents. This one will have a current that looks like this. This one look more like this. To get the same average out of this wave, I have to have a higher peak, more conduction losses. Any questions on that? Time. Okay. A little bit more comments on DAB design. So this plot is just showing what this normalized output current would look like for same switching frequency, same general design, but varying inductance. Okay. And this comment a little while ago, but this is all normalized. So this black dashed line is I out. And the three different lines are three different individual output current waveforms over one full period. What it shows is that as I go to larger inductance, I'm going to have a smaller DIDT during this phase shift interval. And to get the same amount of ramping, it's going to take me a longer time. My small inductance, I can ramp up pretty quick, get to some value slightly higher than the output current, which is an I peak, slightly greater than I out. Stay there during the majority of the switching period. Go to bigger inductance. This DIDT is slower with the same voltage applied to it. So I have a longer time to ramp. And because I've taken a big chunk of the switching period out from delivering very little output power, now I need to ramp up to a higher peak current in order to get to the same average. Okay. So from this perspective, low or small inductance is best for minimizing conduction losses. Okay, here, just another way to look at that same thing. Now on a continuous axis of tank inductance LL, for the same average output current, gold line, average IO. If I go to larger and larger inductance, the RMS and peak currents in IO, which are whether by a transformer turns ratio or just directly, the RMS and peak currents through the primary and secondary bridge and through the tank increase significantly. As I go to very large inductance, my current stresses are way higher than my average output current. Again, supporting the same conclusion, I don't care about conduction losses, I want really small tank inductance. Okay, so the way to design it is choose the smallest tank inductance possible. Change my mind. Anybody disagree with that? Probably gonna have some bad DABs then. Okay, so what's the competing constraint? We hop back here. our ZVS condition was that the total energy stored in the inductor at some given value of I peak needs to be greater than the energy necessary to achieve ZVS on the primary of this delta V squared times CP. From that perspective, at a given I peak, I want the largest tank inductance possible. Ensure ZVS, equivalently a larger LL, let me go down to a smaller peak current and still obtain ZVS. Okay. So if I choose the smallest tank inductance possible to keep low conduction losses, my ZVS range is going to be perhaps higher power than the maximum power of the converter. I'll never achieve ZVS. Okay. I'd like to satisfy this condition down to zero power. That's not going to be possible, but at some very small output power, I want to get ZVS and then maintain it up to full output power. So there is a trade-off. Small inductance will give me minimum conduction losses, but won't give me zero voltage switching. If that's important to me, I need to design my inductance large enough to be able to maintain ZVS over some range of output powers. So this is the same plot before. I've added in is going through these equations, figuring out what is the output current at which I will lose ZVS. What is the minimum output current necessary in order to make sure that all my devices are soft switching? So that's a curve that looks like this red line. If I have very small tank inductance, I need a huge amount of current to be able to get soft switching. If I have very large tank inductance, I don't need much current to get ZVS. Somewhere in the middle here, this minimum current for ZVS will cross whatever my normalized output current is. If I operate anywhere up here, larger tank inductance, I'll get zero volt switching. Anywhere back here, I'm going to lose it. It's all normalized so that at some given reference output current, of arbitrary actual value, 1 amp, it's just normalized to 1. Okay. So I can set that to be whatever. It doesn't have to be my full power. It could be, if I say, hey, I want my converter to output 5 amps, but I'm going to set IO ZVS min, my minimum current necessary to obtain ZVS, at 1 amp. And for anything between 1 amp and 5 amps, I can have soft switching, design the tank inductance off that. That's going to enforce the trade-off. My conduction losses will increase a little bit in order to guarantee soft switching. Okay. Whether I need that is dictated by my design. If I do design this thing at 10 kilohertz, relatively low voltage, maybe I don't care if I lose ZVS. If I design it at megahertz and high voltage, it's going to be critically important that I always maintain soft switching so the thing doesn't blow up. Okay, up with just some comments from literature. Here's just some experimental results showing an example converter performs more or less to the specifications we just looked at. Operated 150 to 12 volts at 1 megahertz. Look at the waveforms, this nice trapezoidal type waveform in the inductor current, these resonant transitions. These two waveforms are VDS of two low side primary side MOSFETs. See, they've got resonant transitions that occupy a pretty significant portion of the switching period. Here I've got sinusoidal waveforms resonating with the tank inductor current to achieve zero voltage switching. The secondary side, because this is a high step-down converter, as I kind of mentioned offhand through the waveforms in the example, I've got a lot of current and very low voltage on the secondary. My ZVS is nearly instantaneous. In fact, I end up with a little bit of ringing due to parasitic inductance. So that resonance happens much faster. Details of that switching transition are dictated more by parasitics than by the actual state in circuit. Nonetheless, if I look at the primary side state plane, what's solved from the equations we looked at versus just taking the waveforms from measurements and plotting them, I get pretty good correspondence, the difference being this little bit of ringing in the tank current. Still ringing around the correct value, relatively high efficiency over a wide operating range. Okay. What we looked at was this nice DCX type operation where V was equal to NVG, or the conversion ratio was equal to the transformer turns ratio. If I am forced to operate in a situation where that's not true, either because I'm in an application where the input or output could vary, or because I've potentially designed it this way for reasons we'll talk about in a second, the exact solutions that we've given here aren't going to apply. We made simplifications throughout where we said, because V is equal to NVG, here's how it looks. And one of the main differences is going to be during this power delivery interval, we're no longer going to have 0 volts applied across the tank inductor. That was true because across the tank inductor during the power delivery interval, we have VG minus V out over N. And if those two are equal, then I have 0 volts across the tank. If they're not, I'll have some voltage, the difference between the input and reflected output, applied across the tank, and I'll have some ramping of my inductor current during that interval. In this case, for the waveforms I'm showing in red, V out is decreased relative to NVG. So V is less than N times VG. Causes during this time, there's a little bit of positive voltage on the inductor, so the current ramps up. It distorts my waveforms in this way. Okay. What you'll notice is that during this time, which is where my primary side is switching, it results in a higher peak current. It's going to give me more energy available for ZVF. Is actually going to improve the condition of soft switching on the primary. It's going to make it easier. It's going to allow me to get to lower power while maintaining soft switching. You can see here, I was at a power in black where I already had soft switching, but this little bit of extra current caused me to get my ZES even faster, more energy available. So I traversed that portion of the state plane with a smaller theta, smaller angle. Okay. More energy for primary ZVS. I'm underlining primary. So by contrast, in this interval, this is our interval 3, where we have our secondary side ZVS, I've now decreased the current available. Now, as we said, the secondary has no ZVS constraints. As long as I have positive current here, as long as this current's greater than 0, the secondary can still resonate up and get 0 voltage switching. But if I keep cranking this, I keep decreasing the output voltage, putting more and more voltage on the tank inductor during interval 4. This will get more and more rotate. Eventually, the polarity of this current will change, at which point, when I shut off during this dead time, what I'm going to do is diode conduct through the opposite devices. And I can either let that happen, in which case it'll change my mode of operation, or just hard switch at that time. And we'll talk about different operating modes in a second. Okay. The other thing that this does is it's going to increase my RMS currents, right? But for the same average output power, now I have a higher peak. I look at the output current I've added in is basically some additional circulating current, where I now have a higher peak, but I'm delivering the same average, and it result in higher conduction losses for the same output current. Okay. If I swap this, say instead of V out less than NVG, look at V out greater than NVG, everything's going to flip. I'm going to have current ramping this way. That's going to give me more current available for the secondary and less for the primary. Looks something like this. So pinching my hand, something like this. This would be my V greater than NVG case. Okay, I put these together, it looks something like this. And on an output plane, we're here. We've got two different plots. They're both output power on the x-axis, and on the y-axis, it's the normalized conversion ratio, MN, which is V out divided by VG, then divided by N. When this is equal to 1, my conversion ratio is equal to the transformer turns ratio, the case we've looked at. On the right, this plot is just contours of efficiency. On the left, I'm looking at is just where do I lose ZVS and at what operating points and on which devices. Okay, so this is from the same converter we just looked at the experimental results of. This area here, where I have full ZVS of all devices. Again, subject to the selection of tank inductance and switching frequency, but for this reference design, out here at high enough power and conversion ratios, kind of in the vicinity of conversion ratio equal to the transformer turns ratio, I can ZVS everything. If I drop my output voltage, what I'll do is I'll be able to get to lower power without having any hard switching on the primary, but I'm going to more quickly incur hard switching on the secondary and is enforced by actually actively switching them without the ZVS in order to regulate the output power. If I increase my output voltage, I'll be the green case here with more current available for the secondary but less for the primary. And now at a higher power, I'll start hard switching the primary. I look over here at the efficiency contours. What I find is that this thing has highest efficiency some region about here where I maintain ZVS, but I'm very close to that J peak equals 2 limit where I have minimum peak current to average output current ratio. Okay. As I go higher and higher in power, I'm putting more and more phase shift. My inductor current waveform is getting less trapezoidal and more triangular. I'm going to have a worse ratio of conduction losses to output power. And in this one, since this was a high step down, high voltage at the input, if I go up into this primary hard switching region, my efficiency drops off pretty quickly, a little more gradiated if I go down in the secondary hard switching, because that's only a 12 volt bridge instead of 150 volt bridge. My C times V squared is much higher on the high voltage bridge. So I see it drop off very quickly when I go into primary hard switching. Okay, one more thing I want to show here is another reference. It comes from ETH, where they designed a 3 kilowatt DAB for an automotive application, a very nice prototype of water cooled and highly integrated. But they were looking at operating over some range where the conversion ratio could change. They had input going from 250 to 450, 240 to 450, output from 11 to 16 that required that they operate off of this nice conversion ratio equal to transformer turns ratio operating point. And the way they did that is by introducing new modulation schemes, which we didn't cover. So by base, they talk about this phase shift operation, which is what we did cover when the voltages are not matched. We have this ramping we just drew. The voltages are matched. This would be a nice trapezoidal wave. To get the same output power with smaller conduction losses, and go to different operating modes where they change the switching pattern from the phase shift modulation, essentially using zero states of the bridges. Let me go somewhere. Let's just do it here. So an operation we talked about, I either had on the primary bridge these two devices on to apply positive VG, these two devices to apply negative VG. Another option is to turn on either these two or these two to apply zero. And by using those states on both the input and output, you can change around the modulation pattern, get different progression of equivalent circuits that can give me more triangular-like tank currents in the inductor, ramp up, ramp down, and then hold. Using those, interspersing them in there can get, particularly at low power where ZVS might be lost, I can get a better ratio of peak current to minimum to get ZVS. I can also get a better ratio of conduction losses to average output current, increase my efficiency. So they were able to optimize over a wide range and show 90%+ efficiency over most of this voltage conversion ratio range. Okay, so that's going to be the end of the discussion of the DAB. We'll have some discussion of transformer saturation, which is going to lead into the series resonant converter next class. We'll pick up there on Wednesday.